Mic check.
Red leather, yellow leather. Red leather, yellow leather.
What's up?
I almost hit video. We almost went video.
Oh, I don't have a camera on this computer, so no can do, yo.
Or is that code for you're naked?
If I was, I would have a camera.
Oh, I forgot. Darn it.
Yeah, man. I guess.
Boy, I gotta tell you right out of the gate.
Yeah.
I'm reading Wildstorm.
Yes.
And I've read Golden Age, Silver Age, Bronze Age, no problem. But there is parts to this, and I don't know if it's just artists' style of writing. I'm not sure. But holy Christ, there is no exposition. There is no history. There is no, hey, if you forgot to buy that issue, well, where we explain such and such, you're just SOL.
Mm-hmm.
It must just have been the way Wildstorm was back in the 90s. I have no idea.
Well, that's because everybody was reading them, dude. You don't need to get caught up. You already had the books.
I don't need to know what that villain is or even any power set of any of the heroes of this team book.
No, you need to go and buy all the issues. That's the way comics work.
But it's so bizarre that they're just they don't even explain people's power set.
Like who? I mean, I think part of the thing, though, is some of those people don't really matter. And some you just learn as you go.
Like, maybe it's just a style. I have no idea, but I've read two team books, and both of them are exactly the same.
Yes.
Style-wise. Like, not the same, like, in storytelling. Just, they just start off, and it's like, hope you know who Battalion is. Hope you know who Mr. Majestic is, because we ain't going to explain nothing. And I'm just like, what? Hold on. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. There was no Wikipedia to be able to look up like, oh, I'm guessing you just read an interview with Jim Lee and he's like, oh, I'm doing this character, Mr. Majestic.
No, there was no Wikipedia. What do you think this is? This is like 93, bro.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, they don't even walk through like, okay, perfect example. Zealot and Grifter.
Mm-hmm.
Going back and forth with brother and sister stuff from, and she's part of CODA.
Right.
They don't explain what that is. They don't explain how they got to know each other. They don't explain CODA. They don't explain her power set. It's just sort of like, she looks like a samurai. Yep, she's a samurai. CODA. It's sort of like a house of samurai assassins. Grifter, don't know why he wears that face, that mask over his face, the neckerchief over his face. Could he be scarred up? Could he look like Phantom of the Opera? No, because he takes that thing off every once in a while and he's a good looking guy. It's like, what the hell's going on here?
See, this is where we differ, Nick.
Okay.
Because I think you subscribe to the Stan Lee school of storytelling.
Of course, the only school, thank you.
Whereas I do not.
Hey, and I'm not even saying you have to explain it in every issue. I've read 12 issues of Wildcats.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think any person, any character in that entire 12-issue run, actually 13 because I read the zero issue.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only person that I could possibly say this about that wasn't like this is the who is it? She was the adult dancer.
Voodoo.
She's about the only one that comes close to having a backstory. She was an adult dancer, but then like you don't know anyone's power set. You just get these cool names and then you see these villains. You don't really get their motivation, why they want to tear down the earth, but all right, let's fight. And all the villains know every character's name.
Mm-hmm.
Right off the bat. I have no idea how, but they do.
Mm-hmm.
And yet no one's power set is even described. And then Stormwatch is written by somebody different. And that feels like there's a little bit more attention to the writing. And I mean, I've talked about this before. Like, when an artist is an artist first, writer second, and then they take on both duties, one of those duties is going to suffer. And Jim Lee, when he was doing Wildcats, holy Christ, the art did not suffer.
Right.
No way.
Right.
And it might have came out late, but did it seem like, I would say writing was there, but writing was fourth or fifth priority. At least that's how it came off the first 13 issues.
So you got to remember that most of these guys, I think all of them actually, were artists at Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
And so it makes perfect sense that they would put story second or third
for sure.
Or fourth or fifth. Okay.
People are coming to these books for the art. I totally get
correct.
That. But guys, you got to hire writers or like plan it out a little. I mean, I hate to say it. Right now I'm reading Stormwatch, and Brandon Choi and Jim Lee's co-writing until Chris Claremont comes on for
yeah.
a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And even the Choi stuff, I was like, at least he's explaining, you know, the space station. He's explaining this and that, but they never go in. I mean, like, you get the battalion has a brother that he wants to keep out of this superhero spotlight, and he has to protect his mother. But do you ever get any backstory on Battalion? Not in the first 7 issues that I've read so far. Like, there is no back, there's no backstory to anyone. It's almost like you're just dropped into, it's like a television series that, like 24, that you're dropped into season 3.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't need to know any of the backstory. This is day 1. Let's go.
So,
even though there should be backstory.
Well, so my question to you is, how much do you want to know immediately? I mean, I'm not defending the books. The book, I mean, I love them to death. You know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm not defending them. I'm just curious, how much do you want off the bat? Because, I mean, you're getting story. I mean, you know, some of it may not be like top tier story. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
But they're fun books to read. The art's
yes.
fantastic.
Yes.
How much?
The coloring is great.
The coloring is great. Yeah. How much more beyond that do you want? You see what I'm saying? Because, like, I mean, you do get backstory. You're just not going to get it for a while.
Well, I guess that's my issue. I don't get it for a while. And a lot of people are crossing over, and I'm just like, oh my God, are you serious? You're going to bring a whole other set of superheroes into a book that I know has their own book. And it's like, you're just going, like, you're adding more and more into this. Oh my God. As a reader, I was just like, so utterly confused. But I mean, to be honest with you, I think that's why I never started Image. I never started Wildstorm, because I just knew it was another universe that I probably couldn't get into, nor could at the time, because the books were more expensive. I couldn't afford to get into. I couldn't buy them all, yet they're all interconnected.
Mm.
And I think that's why I steered clear of Valiant. I steered clear of Wildstorm, Image. I just did at the beginning.
So shared universes are hard because of that, yes. However, I think you're trying to find too many connections in what you're reading. So even when they bring in new characters and new teams that have their own books, as you said, you don't really need to get those. You know what I mean? Like, you can just keep reading the story that you're reading to learn about these characters. And if you're interested, then yeah, you know, you go read their books.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they did that sometimes, like, as backdoor pilots, like Backlash, for example, in Stormwatch.
Mm-hmm.
He leaves after issue like 3, I think, 2 or 3.
Mm-hmm.
And he has his own series. So you learn all about him then.
Mm-hmm.
But then later on, you learn a lot more when they bring in, what was the name of it? Team 7?
Yeah.
You look, because Backlash was in there, and there were a few other people. I can't remember who exactly was on the team. Deathblow and somebody else. So you learn about them. And it brings in additional stuff. And then you get, like, further connections, like the Gen 13 stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You learn how they're connected to some of these other characters. I think the thing is, you are very stuck on this every issue should be someone's first issue, which I've told you before, I don't agree with.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you're having the problem where I feel like you could be enjoying, I'm not saying you're not enjoying them, okay?
I'm not saying that either. I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
So, But I think you could be enjoying him more if you weren't so focused on the fact that you're not getting enough background. You'll get the background, I promise. It's there. You're going to get it.
Okay.
You just got to keep on reading.
The bad thing is Comixology only has the first like 12 issues of each of these series, which that's what I grabbed. And I'm sure if I read the entire run, it's all there. Sure. I totally get it. And to be honest with you, now getting into Stormwatch with Chris Claremont, it's like night and day because he is fleshing out the story a hell of a lot more. So that's it's interesting. And as well, like even with like Marvel Events, I've told you before where I'll pick up Secret Invasion and I won't read all the offshoot stories, but I know sort of the bits and pieces of them, and then I'll reread them later, and all that mentally fills in. It's like a jigsaw puzzle and all those pieces come together. Mm-hmm. I also want that to happen in these books, and I don't know if I'll be able to get that by issue 12, and I highly doubt I will.
No, you won't. Right. You won't. In fact, I was having this chat with Rob because, as you know, Rob is reading Stormwatch.
Yeah.
And he I think was maybe at a point where, like, I don't know if he's read it before or not. I have no idea. I know he's tweeted about it, but I haven't really been on Twitter, so I don't know much about what he's tweeting. Yeah. But he did message me privately and ask me a couple questions about it. And, you know, to kind of go with the point that you were just making, I don't think 12 issues is enough. And obviously with the way comics work today, that would not fly anymore.
Right.
Back then, probably could. Matter of fact, I was talking to him, and we've talked about this on this podcast before, because after, I think it's after issue 13, you get issue 25 in Stormwatch.
Mm.
And, it's like a time jump thing. There's a reason. It is set up in the previous issue, which is like, I think issue 12. Mm-hmm. It is set up as to why you jump to 25. And then you can read issue 25 either in publication order, so like after issue 12 or 13, or mm-hmm. in numbering order, so after issue 24.
Rob mentioned that.
Yeah, and I told him to read that issue twice, to read it within the story and try to catch the threads that are mentioned in that story mm-hmm. in the subsequent issues, and then after 24, read it again because issue 25 follows the events of 24.
I think that's pretty cool.
Which is very cool.
Yeah.
And I don't think something that anybody ever really does, ever.
Mm-hmm. You know what? You know what also, and I don't think this is like reading it the Marvel way. I think, and this is definitely an indictment probably with the modern sensibility of reading comics. I think it's no comic publication really can do a slow burn anymore.
No, you can't.
I mean, that's an entire well over a year looking at Wildstorm and all the publication delays.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's well over 12 months. There's no way any comic book will do 12 issues and just let it sort of coast by. Yet I don't think that there is any artist or writer that could do that right now.
There's not. Like and we've talked about it before. Guys like, you know, like John Byrne or Claremont, those kind of guys. Mm-hmm. When they were on books for, you know, 5, 6, 10, 15 years, mm-hmm. and they could tell a story over that amount of time. For one, a lot of comics don't even last a year now.
Yeah.
So you can't really do that.
Yeah, I know. It's sort of, like I said, it's sort of strange, but also very cool that I'm not going to get everything answered. So I sort of like that. But it's just, I think it's right out of the gate. Like, I never even read Spawn number one.
Ugh.
But I will hazard a guess that Todd McFarlane pretty much laid out the motivation for the character, how this happened, at least within the first year.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. Like, reading these two issues, like, Brandon Choi does a good job of explaining why there's this, you know, why there's this space police force up in space protecting Earth. And that's enough to be like, that's pretty cool. Where Jim Lee doesn't, he explains whatever the demonites, however you pronounce it.
Yeah, demonites and cherubim.
Yeah, he sort of explains it, but not really. So it's just like, wait, hold on, what's going on? And then all of a sudden they're jumping to like supervillain of the week. Which I get, it's bombastic action fun. But it's just, it doesn't tether me into like anything. There's no emotional tether for me. That's the thing. It's all just bubblegum bombastic action fun, which not everything has to have like a gravity and a grounded feeling to it. But maybe I'm just looking where I should be looking elsewhere at other titles for Wildstorm.
Yeah,
for
so that. You're definitely trying to read too much into what you're reading. You really should just enjoy what you're reading, number one. But I don't think you're the only person to feel that, because like Wildstorm, for example, they used to put out source books. You remember source books?
Oh, yeah.
So I think they had two source books. So whenever they had, you know, like 50 new characters that popped up on the books, people are like, well, what's this person's story?
And you're
waiting a year to get a story, and you can just go pick up the source book. And yeah, like it's an additional thing you got to pick up. And now you don't even need that kind of stuff anymore, right? You can just go on Wikipedia or Comic Vine or whatever and look up like character information. But back then you didn't have that.
That was something, one of my points.
Yeah, so that was something to appease people like you that want to know more. Whereas I'm more on the opposite camp, where I don't feel like every issue should be a first issue. Because I think that demeans the intelligence of people that have been reading it the entire time.
Sure, yeah, for sure. And you're wasting valuable page space doing that.
Well, also that.
I just want things to mentally fit into what I need exposition. I want to, like, if it's a mystery, it's a mystery, cool. But it doesn't feel like Jim Lee approaches it that way. It feels like he knows where his strengths are, and visually he shows those strengths, which totally makes sense. I totally get it. And, you know, hey, by issue 30, maybe all of a sudden it is like, dang, he's writing a really good story right now. I don't know. I'm not that far. But I did enjoy it, and the colors were pretty pretty fantastic.
Yes, they had great creative teams, and they took care of their creators very well.
Yeah, absolutely.
They used to buy them Ferraris for fun.
I couldn't even imagine.
You can't, right? Like, you don't even have that now. You know what I mean?
Hell no.
Like, if you put out an indie book, you're not selling 2-3 million copies. You'd be lucky to sell 5,000 copies.
And I don't even think, if you named off like the top 5 writers at DC or Marvel, I don't even think that they could, like, how many of those writers would be able to go to their publishers and be like, hey, I want 12 issues to tell this story. Oh yeah, what's it about? Like, what character is it about? Oh, it's a brand new universe. I don't even think DC or Marvel would be like, yeah, here's 12 issues, here's 15 issues.
Well, so you got to think of it this way.
Even to their money makers.
Yeah.
My guess is they wouldn't be like, yeah, start a brand new team with brand new characters. They would be putting serious pressure on them of like, so you're going to put Batman in that series? You're going to put Superman? When does Wolverine come in for a 5-issue arc within this 10-issue? Right. Like, they want to be guaranteed that that's going to make money, even though they might be the number one, number two writer of said publisher.
Yep.
Doesn't matter to the publisher anymore.
Yep. So you look at, comic sales are just in the shitter, right? So,
for sure.
I mean, you look at a book like Batman, and I'm not throwing it out because I'm a Batman fan, but because Batman's always like the sales average, right? So usually you're looking at like 100,000 copies on a Batman book. It takes Tom King more than a year of Batman books to equal the number of books that these guys are putting out at Wildstorm or Top Cow or anywhere else. You know, the early Image days per issue.
Yep.
And I'm not even talking about like a big book. Like a book like Prophet was selling a million copies easy.
Isn't that crazy? Just crazy.
So, different times, Nick.
Yeah, I know.
Different times.
And just like going to a comic convention, you look at the median age of everybody, and sure, there's a lot more women than I ever saw back in the 90s, 2000s. But the median age is about 20 years older than when I was going to a convention in the 80s or 90s. Where before, like 80s, 90s, it was all like high school, younger.
Yeah, yeah.
And a few adults here and there, and a few adults that were there just with their kids, and a few adults that were there, period.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, has that flipped.
Yep, it's changed quite a bit. Matter of fact, I'm going to a con this weekend.
Nice.
I'm going to SC Comic Con on Sunday.
Ooh, who's going to be there?
I have no idea.
Oh, man.
I'm going to be there.
I know, okay. I mean,
what more do you want?
Signing at a booth, Martin Fred.
Somebody will be there.
Okay, just thought I would ask.
And it'll be fun. I'm not doing the whole weekend like I usually do though. I'm gonna take Saturday a little easy, and then Sunday we're gonna go. I'm gonna take the girls.
Nice. What are they dressed as?
No idea.
Oh man. You know I like to know.
I know. When we figure it out, I'll tell you.
All right.
We haven't figured that out yet.
Okay.
But so yeah, I'm gonna go and do that. I don't know, man. I'm more eager for here's the problem. I'm always very excited for this con,
mm-hmm.
but it's always like at least a month or more in between cons, right?
Sure.
Like I don't even have that this year.
No,
because SC Comic Con is this weekend, and then in 2 weeks is C2E2, yep. And then I think like 2 weeks after that is NC Comic Con. Like it ruins the enjoyment a little bit when they're all so close together.
Yeah, they're all lumped in together.
Yeah.
And I hate that C2E2 is so early this year. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Jesus.
It's going to be cold as crap.
Yep. 8 degrees here today.
Nice. I will bring my very light sweater.
Your shawl.
Well, I think we're only staying like half a mile away, so.
Nice.
That's not too bad.
Well, just to put a button on the Wildstorm stuff, I know it's not all like that. Because I've read things here and there. I know some people put in the time and effort for the writing, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm sure Jim Lee writes a hell of a lot better story than he was, God, how old, back in the day. You know, it's like, shit, of course he's better. He's been doing it how many more years?
They were all young. They were like in their mid-20s, right?
Yeah, you can't knock them right out of the – I mean, shoot – Chris Claremont wasn't Chris Claremont at that age, you know? Mm-hmm. So I can't bust their balls at all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thoroughly impressed that at their age to do what they did, as well as it was shocking that you can do something, and sure, some of it was like X-Men analogs or, you know, Justice League analogs, but it's like to come out of the gate and at least throw together like team books, that's pretty impressive. You're not just coming up with one superhero, you're coming up with multiple superheroes, and that's pretty damn impressive.
And writing team books is hard, right?
Because you
gotta juggle a million different characters.
For sure. You're not picking the easiest thing to do right out of the gate. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know what's really interesting? I noticed it today, especially reading Stormwatch. How different the new team books are in the 90s compared to what you would see today, especially, and I think today is completely influenced by, we got to have that character on TV and in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what that means? Take that stupid mask off. Whatever it takes, we have to get that person in some form of costume where they can show off their face, because we're going to have a beautiful looking person in that role. Where you look at like any of the Wildstorm team books or heroes, most of them have kick ass, you know, face plates, or, you know, a costume with like a cowl, or, you know, just something completely cool, because there's no detail. You don't have to draw a face. The easiest thing to do is throw a mask on somebody, and then you just draw two lines where a nose should be. Perfect.
Right.
Move on. But like now it's like you have to have that face available to emit emotions, and, you know, all of a sudden like everyone has to be uber sensitive and not just this like huge muscle upon muscle person that has no emotion, because I'm fighting for what's right. And what are you against? You're against, you know, you're for equality and racism, and I'm against, you know, it's so black and white, which is sort of interesting.
It's sort of boring too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I'm not, I don't like when they write for the movies.
I completely agree.
Yeah, I don't like that at all.
Masks are still cool. If done right, they look really cool.
Well, it's not just that, dude. It's like, we talked about this before. Like, I don't want to go see a movie and it's a story I read in a comic, right? Like, yeah, sure. It's cool to see, like, this comic story that you really like be brought into the film or whatever, and that's fine. But I think part of it is that it ruins the illusion of fantasy, right? Where when you're reading a book, I've noticed this a lot lately because I've been reading a lot of novels. Mm-hmm. When you're reading a book, everyone always says, right, when they make a book into a movie, oh, the book is much better. Like,
yeah.
Give me one example when somebody told you the movie was better. There's probably not one. And if there is, you're going to have a hard time figuring it out. And I think the reason for that is when you're reading the words, you're filling in a lot of stuff, a lot of the in-between space in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that and somebody tries to put their vision of what you read, you don't think it's as good because you feel like your version is better.
Well, in your head, the way you're reading something, you can take your time and ruminate over it and read it as slow as you want. And that gives it more of a gravity and drama to it.
Mm-hmm.
Where a writer or a director or a performer can speed up that line just to get on to the next scene as you're like, no, 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 that was so important. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that meant so much to me. I was emotional during that part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, it's tough. But sometimes it goes the other way around too, though, right? Like, think about when the Joker shows up in Batman, for example, right? Like, you probably can't not read the Joker's voice as Mark Hamill.
True.
So, it can work the way around, but I think for the most part, it's just that that ruining that illusion of fantasy is kind of what ruins it. I don't know.
But what about going back to like your Joker analogy? What about a writer, or do you like when a writer rethinks that hero or character and puts a spin on it, reinvents it, not just giving he or she a new costume, but rethinking their motivations or their character?
Mm.
Do you like that? Like there's parts of like specifically I'm thinking of like Peter David when he was writing, you know, Hulk. He made Hulk, you know, he made Peter David's version of the Hulk.
Mm.
Or Dan Slott made Spider-Man and all of his rogues gallery his own.
Mm-hmm.
And even visually changing a lot of the villains. But then there's parts where it's just like, and you hear it all the time in nerddom, where they're like, that Joker's not my Joker, get him out of here. And I was just curious, where do you fall? Do you like the apple cart being shook up every once in a while? Or is it you still want to have those original tenets of what you think that character is? You still want to see that part of that character?
Now, I think it's important to have changes every once in a while. It just depends on how it's done, right? And I mean, to continue with the Joker, I mean, there was a period of time where the Joker didn't show up in Batman books. And it was a long period of time, right? It was like 25 years.
Right.
I think from the 50s until like late 70s, there were no Joker stories. And there was, I mean, several reasons for that. But then when the Joker came back, he was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, at one point in the 50s, he was not really interesting anymore. Right. He was just kind of like a clown. Whereas mm-hmm. when you read like Golden Age Joker stories, there's only so much they can do because the medium was still very new, but I mean, you could tell the Joker was a creepy, disturbed MF-er, right? And then as time progressed, he kind of became more of a caricature. And then you got stuff like, you know, in Batman 66, the TV show, where he really is just like a jokester, right? And that's one way to interpret it. But to me,
and by the way,
yes,
that's my Joker.
I think it's a lot of people's Jokers.
Yeah.
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 And there's nothing wrong with that version. I just think, for me personally, it's more interesting when he is a little more deranged. Partially because part of the reason I like the Batman and Joker dynamic is because they're both very deranged. Mm-hmm. And I'm very fascinated by just the way people work. And
yeah, you like the psychology of Batman's universe, for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But that goes with your thing, right? Like, I'm okay with reading just a fun Joker.
See, right? this is the thing. When Joker this is my Joker. Joker pulls out a gun and it has the bang attached to it, the bang sign. Where a lot of people's Joker, that could be acid that shoots in somebody's face that completely scalds them. And for me, my Joker shoots out the acid from the flower. The gun is the bang, as well as if he's driving next to Batman, he's not ramming into Batman. He's waving to Batman and then driving off the side of a cliff. Because he's crazy, but he also is harmless. Where I think a lot of people want the psychopath crazy. Which I like that. Believe me, when all of a sudden I discovered the psychopath crazy Joker, I was like, ooh, that's not my Joker, but that's really interesting because that takes Batman in a whole different avenue.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, so my Joker would be more akin to like Alan Moore's Joker.
Do tell, explain.
I just like that deranged, but.
But he's not crazy. He is well planned out, but it's a cuckoo plan, but it's still very meticulously planned.
But the thing is, I think it makes him more, this is going to sound so weird, but it makes him sound more primal, right? Which again goes kind of to what I like about the dynamic of those two characters.
Yeah.
Where they're kind of like opposite spectrums of a person's psyche. Right? And I think.
So you like the two coin. Two sides of the same coin.
Yes.
Dynamic.
Yeah. I really like that. And cool. And Alan Moore does it really well because you have that psychoticness, but it's got a purpose.
Yeah.
Right? It's not just, I'm going to do crazy shit because I'm crazy. It's, I'm going to do crazy shit because what I do means something in the overall scheme of things.
For sure. Now, do you think, because when I look at Alan Moore Joker, I don't think of that version of Joker as a quote unquote, like he's a dark version of Joker. Like I think a lot more modern writers have taken that Joker and have made him as black hearted as as dark as possible.
Yeah.
And that's where it's like, it becomes almost too dark for me.
I think, that's where they kind of missed the point of what like people like Alan Moore were trying to do.
Yeah.
Because it's not about like the guy is just dark and, what's the word I'm looking for? Like just derelict. That's not at all what it is. He's like the oh God, what's that saying? The thing about the immovable force. What is that? You know what I'm talking about?
What is it? It's something object to the immovable force.
Yes. How does that go?
It's like the unmovable object to the immovable force.
Yeah, something like that. As a matter of fact, you know what? I'm going to look it up because it's fucking awesome. There it is. Immovable force meets unstoppable object.
Ah, there we go.
Yeah, there you go. So Batman is the immovable force and the Joker is the unstoppable object.
But see, that's a great description with Alan Moore's Joker because he was that type of force. He wasn't just a spinning top out of control.
Right.
Where I think a lot of people, when they made him really dark, it was just like, it's just like the randomness became amped up. Like the Joker doesn't just pull out a dumb gun and shoot somebody in the head. Like there's a point. Like Joker has a point. He's crazy. And maybe that logic only works in his head, but there wasn't a sense of randomness to it. Well, and I think a lot of people do the randomness because they know they can't fall back on. And then Bruce Wayne woke up and it was all a dream. Like they can't fall back on that stupid crutch, you know?
You must be reading Batman right now.
Oh, buddy.
So, nobody said that. I didn't say that.
Maybe I shouldn't be reading Batman. Because you know how much I hate that shit.
Welcome to the Nerdy Legion.
It was all a dream.
Psychology of Batman special.
I like that. People like you talking about Batman. Go on.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, it's so here's the thing. I think this kind of goes with what you said. So I think the people that get it right treat these characters more like you've heard of the hero's journey, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Joseph Campbell.
Joseph Campbell. So for anyone listening that has never read Joseph Campbell's The Hero's Journey, then do yourself a favor and go pick it up. You can go to audible.com. What is it? I don't remember. Something.
Nerdlegion.com/audible.
That's what it is.
Yes.
And pick it up for free. You get 2 free credits. All right. Anyways. So go read that. I read it in 10th grade, I think, in school.
Mm-hmm.
It was mandatory reading. I can't remember what class it was. I want to say religion, like comparative religion, but I could be wrong.
It should be a mandatory reading period.
I agree. And if you are a fan of comic books, you're thinking to yourself, Martin, I don't want to read books. I like comic books. And you're doing yourself a disservice because you can learn a lot from books.
Actually, you know what you could do if somebody did say that? You could find The Hero's Journey. PBS did a multi-part series.
Oh, yeah.
That is a fantastic, even if you read the book, it's a fantastic compendium to that book.
Yes.
And I'm sure you can find it on the YouTubes, or you can try to locate it within PBS. But
yes.
It is really, really good.
So you're thinking
Bill
to yourself...
Bill Moyer did it.
Really?
Right? Bill Moyer? I think it was Bill Moyer.
Really?
I believe so.
I mean, that makes
sense. I believe he was the moderator of it.
Huh. He's an interesting cat.
For sure.
So anyways, we're not going to talk about him today. But if you're thinking to yourself, that has nothing to do with comic books, it does, because The Hero's Journey describes exactly how the arc of any story, really. But I think in particular with comic books, how it works. I mean, obviously this applies to like movie plots. It mm-hmm. applies to fiction novels.
Mm-hmm.
It applies to some fictionalized nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty straightforward. So I don't remember this offhand, but I did pull it up. So the steps are Call to Adventure, Supernatural Aid, The Threshold. Then you either find a helper or a mentor. Go into the Abyss, where you have a revelation. You have Transformation, Atonement, and then Return. So Return Back Home. And it's all based on like classical mythological stories, right? Like the story of Jesus, the story of Buddha, the Odyssey, things like that. Because really, all these steps are basically the steps needed for a hero to go from the normal person to saving the world.
And the steps that you named off, it sounds like those are chapters in any comic book.
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
The flow of any character, like their arc.
Well, and you have these with, like, in terms of overall story structure too, right? And in different terminology,
mm-hmm.
outside of mythology. So, like, when you do when you have like a movie, for example, the structure is like, it's something like plot. And you have crisis, what is it? Action, denouement, and resolution. Right. So
mm-hmm.
it's basically the same kind of thing. So if you want to become a better reader of comic books, then you should go read Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey.
Amen.
It's fantastic. And, changed my life, by the way, when I read it, because when I took that class, I had never thought about any of these things. And by this point, I mean, I had been reading comics for, I don't know, 10th grade, I was what, like 15, 16? So like 6, 7 years I've been reading comics. Never
sure.
thought about any of this stuff until I read this and applied it to comics. And you really do get a better understanding of just all kinds of storytelling.
Yeah, all of Joseph Campbell's writings is pretty spectacular.
Yeah, yeah. What's the other one? Power of Myth? That one's really good too.
Yep.
How do we get into Hero's Journey? Oh, yeah. So I know why. Okay.
And, I mean, you know, Alan Moore's read Joseph
Campbell.
Oh,
for sure. And you know, here's the thing. So there's writers that come out that people don't like for whatever reason, because they think maybe they're pretentious. Alan Moore being one of those, Grant Morrison being one of those, Warren Ellis, you know, Grant mm-hmm. Ennis, those kind of guys, or Garth Ennis, those kind of guys. And maybe they are a little pretentious, but also maybe part of the reason they appear a little pretentious is because maybe they know a little bit more than you do, and
mm-hmm.
you don't really understand it. You know what I mean? So I think to be a better comic book reader, maybe you should see like where these guys get their really fucking crazy ideas sometimes.
Yep.
Because, I mean, they're crazy, but they write some really good shit based on those ideas.
And, mm-hmm.
and maybe you would like them more if you understood where those ideas come from.
Yeah. The building blocks.
The building blocks. People don't want to do that. People want the easy way out, right? That's why my kids watch, videos on YouTube of people playing video games.
Yeah.
Cause, playing games is hard. Why not just watch somebody else do it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't judge my kid. I mean, I do. I'm judging them very hard right now. But, I mean, I do it too, right? Like, I mean, I watch people play Hearthstone because you get, like, strategies. But I actually play the damn game.
I do the same thing.
So what I'm saying is, by all means, go read comic reviews and listen to podcasts. In particular, this podcast, The New Legion with Nick Wetmore, because it's fantastic.
Oh, God.
But do some research for yourself. You know what I mean?
So, okay, going back to the Batman Joker.
Oh, that's where it came out. Yes. So
can I ask you, is when you imagine Joker, are you picturing the Alan Moore Joker? Are you picturing the Killing Joke? Are you picturing Brian Boland?
100%.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, so that really is your pinnacle Joker.
Yeah, and that's not even my first Joker. I mean, my first Joker was the Batman 66 Joker.
Yeah, of course. But I my guess is that wasn't even the first one you read. The first Joker you
read. I'm trying to think what the first Joker I read. Because when I jumped on was right before Nightfall. So I'm trying to think when Joker showed up. It had been quite a while before the Joker showed up in the books that I was reading.
Yeah, because he only made – wasn't it just a very quick appearance in Nightfall?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, he's just such a like character that's just been burned into everyone's head who reads comics. It's hard to even go back to what was my first exposure to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's part of the reason. Well, I don't know if that's the reason. That doesn't make sense. I was going to say maybe that's part of the reason he's not my favorite Batman villain. But I mean, I would put like Scarface probably like at the top or close to the top.
Wow.
And Scarface is pretty new. I mean, he didn't show up till like late detective, like in the 600s, I think.
It's not surprising that two of your favorite characters might not be the favorite characters, but both of those characters are very psychological based.
Well, and the other one I really like is Scarface, Scarecrow, which really has the same problem that the Joker has.
Mm.
Because a lot of people try to do this caricature of the Scarecrow. I mean, I don't know how familiar with Scarecrow, but like Scarecrow was kind of scary, but not really until the Batman anime series came in.
Mm.
And the stuff that Dini and them did with Scarecrow, like really shaped what Scarecrow became in the comic books.
I remember Scarecrow, and maybe it was just when I was originally reading him, but I just remember reading him from my cousin and the ones that she had. I just equated them to, oh, these have to be Halloween stories. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the only time Scarecrow appears is right around Halloween. Whether that's true or not, I have no idea. But in my head, when I was reading them, it must have been close to Halloween.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah, actually, I remember when Long Halloween came out, I was like, oh, a Scarecrow book. And it wasn't. But
no, yeah. Sadly.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. So my tops are Scarecrow, Scarface, and KG Beast, just for the record.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Which KG Beast is probably the only non-psychological one that you name there.
Yes, but he's also one of those unstoppable forces or unstoppable objects.
True, true, true. Yeah. But I mean, knowing your love of language and psychology, like when you name off certain villains or heroes, it's like, I can see that thread.
Yeah,
I can see why all of a sudden you're like, ooh, that's cool. I totally get it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the reason that I brought up the hero's journey was because I think like ultimately the people that get that relationship right, and really I think a lot of the Batman Rogues Gallery, right? I mean, not all of them, but a lot of them appeal to these like there's a word for this, but like mythological stereotypes, right? And you see this kind of thing in like team books, for example, right? Like if you pick up a team book, what do you have? You always have like the super powered man. You always have like the really smart guy. You have like a really strong woman. You have like the big giant strong dude. And then you have like a ninja or like somebody with psychic power or something like that.
Yep.
Right? Like there's a reason for that because these are just like, I guess trope might be a better word for it. They're just kind of like tropes of characters.
And then you look over at the other publisher across the street. And it's like, okay, what's their analog for this character? All right, put that character.
Yeah, yeah. And I understand why people do that. And I think some of that is done on purpose, right? If you look at a book like Youngblood, it's extremely obvious, like, what Liefeld ripped off of where, right? For, like, all of his characters. But at the same time, like, it's not like he's creating something new. He's just using these stereotypes of characters that have been around for forever. And just putting his own spit on it.
It's just like, for me, it's just like music. Like, I love, like, T-Rex. Absolutely love them. They're easily in my top five. But is there any, like, is T-Rex putting out music now? Answer, no. So when a group comes along and they sound like T-Rex, it's like, guess what? T-Rex isn't making T-Rex music anymore. I like that style of music. I will listen to this group, even though they aren't T-Rex and they're ripping off T-Rex. It's just because I like that style of music.
How does T-Rex make music with those little tiny arms?
Oh, brother. Bang a gong. Get it on. Get out of here.
Oh, man. I had to. I was going to go with an extinction joke, but I was like, nah, I like this one better.
It's a lot stranger when you look at like comics in the late 80s, 90s, where all of a sudden the companies started to bring in their marketing people. And all of a sudden it's like Fantastic Four. Yeah. Put Spider-Man in that, put Wolverine in that and The Thing and She-Hulk. Cause all those comic books sell a lot, right? Okay. Let's go. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, but that doesn't make any okay. And then all us dumb comic book readers are like, hell yeah. Now that's a super group. Let's go. Well, and we brought that shit up.
You know what's really funny? And this maybe goes back to one of the first things we talked about how what dire situation comics are in right now. Since you brought up the marketing thing, I remember when this started happening in the, you know, 90s. I mean, it started probably in the late 80s, but I remember this starting to happen in the 90s. And it's weird how comic book publishers really haven't learned anything, because it almost feels like they're doing a lot of the things that they were doing back then. Problem being, they don't sell as much as they used to back then. Mm. But where you have kind of the marketing machine pushing things along, is when these companies started getting into trouble. I mean, you got to remember, like, Marvel went bankrupt like twice.
Yeah.
Right? Between the mid 80s and the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
DC went bankrupt a couple times. They got lucky that Warner Brothers bought them. And then DC almost bought Marvel. Mm-hmm. You know? And it was because of these marketing tactics that people were kind of, I mean, people were irritated. And the problem with comics is you never know, like, what a book is actually selling. Because all you ever get is those sales that mean nothing from Diamond.
Right.
Because it's just what comic shops ordered. And like, who gives a shit? Like how many copies of, give me a book, Batman 65. How many copies of Batman 65 are sitting on the shelf? Like, yeah, they sold 100,000 copies. But like, did 100,000 people read that book? I doubt it.
Walk into my comic book store, you'll probably see 200 of them, you know, sitting in the back bin.
Yeah. So.
But it's interesting, like, I was listening to Epic Marvel podcast and they were talking, there was an interview with Jim Starlin He was saying when Infinity Gauntlet originally came out, no one wanted to give him any of their characters. And, you know, he would go to the editor of the X-Men books and they were like, no, we'll give you, you know, this one offshoot character. And then finally the editor for Infinity Gauntlet was like, no, we want two characters and we're going to pick them. Because, you know, they you can't just put, and of course all the X books, they were selling like hotcakes. So they just wanted to be in their own little pocket universe. Well, that's why if you remember like Infinity Gauntlet, Wolverine and Reed Richards or Wolverine and Scott are in it, but they're only in it for a very, very brief time. They're in, they're out. And then all of a sudden, Infinity Gauntlet sold so much that when all of a sudden Jim Starlin went around for the sequel, everybody was like, here, 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 take all of our characters. And then he also got saddled with just the opposite happening, that Marvel, all these editors on these books that weren't selling at all, were like, please, please, please use this character. And Jim Starlin was like, that's why all of a sudden I put in these characters, and I had no clue their name. I had no clue their power set. I just had to put them in because these editors were like, no, 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 you have to put these characters in.
Yeah, that's how Secret Wars went, right? The original one.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Because who was it? Hasbro, I guess?
Yeah, they had the toys.
Yeah, they had the toys. They're like, can you just make some kind of story so we can make these? We have all these leftover, like, He-Man action figures.
We got to move these toys out of here. Come on. Help us unload this garbage.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, see, that's how you ruin things.
Yeah, for sure.
That's how you ruin things.
Or all of a sudden, that's how you get an Avengers book, or Ghost Rider has Wolverine, Captain America, and Spider-Man guest starring in arc after arc after arc of this book. Because those are the three books that we're selling like hotcakes.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's one of the issues that comics has now, right? I mean, it's a business and they need to sell books. So I'm not shitting on them for that. But, you know, when your top-selling book regularly does 100,000 copies, that's not really sustainable, right? The threshold of cancellation is much lower than it used to be, for sure. I mean, dude, think about it. If 20 years ago, if a comic book was selling 100,000 copies, it was gone.
Yep, canceled.
Gone. And now
it was given to this young artist or writer that's coming up. All right, hey, we'll let you try to save this thing in 3 issues. Go.
Yep. Now they just limp them along for months at 15,000-20,000.
But buddy, at this point, I mean, when push comes to shove, I just want every comic book to be successful, because the last thing I want on the face of this earth is for comic books to go away.
I agree with you, but I would much rather have 40 books from DC that are just fucking ridiculous quality, like story, art, everything, just exactly what I would want to pay $3.99 for. Then put out, 70, 80 books and half of them be mediocre. Like, why put out mediocre product? Just put out the best fucking product you can put out.
Hell, I'll even go worse than you. I'll take 30. Just give me 30 stellar books. That's fantastic. That's great.
There was a rumor a couple weeks ago about DC launching as the new 22. Did you hear about this?
I knew they were trying to trim down the fat a little bit.
Yeah, so they were trying to trim the fat down, and the rumor was that they were going to relaunch as the new 22, where they're going to put out 22 regular books. Of course, that wasn't the case at all. I mean, they did restructure, but like basically all the books that were going to be canceled are already canceled. All right, so a lot of the New Age of Heroes stuff and Titans, Suicide Squad, a few other things. But like that was the rumor, and people were like flipping their shit.
Of course.
Because DC's been putting out, 70 books, 80 books for years. How are they going to put out 22 books? And I was thinking to myself, fuck yeah, give me 22 books, because I know that they're going to be really fucking good 22 books.
Agreed. You know what I'm sort of surprised they haven't done? I know this might be heresy. I'm surprised one of the big two haven't taken one of those books that are on that mediocre cancellation line. Like Green Arrow. Let's just say Green Arrow, Aquaman, you know the type of book.
Yeah.
That's always gets relaunched, has huge numbers at the beginning, and then starts trickling off pretty quick. Hell, I'll even put perfect example, Hawkman. Started off huge. Great team, great creative team. What more could you want? Well, obviously, you look at the numbers, and they're just trailing off a cliff. And they're struggling to get to, 12 or 16?
Yeah, something like that.
Which is real frustrating, considering the high-quality talent. I'm shocked that one of the big two, look how big it is right now. All these people are like, we want this book, we want this book, don't cancel it. Guess what? If you want Hawkman so bad, I'm shocked that DC hasn't been like, we'll put it on Kickstarter. If you guys really want it, we'll charge you $20 for that book. And if you want it, hey, how many people will support this?
So Warner Brothers would never do that.
I'm just saying that would be something that people would like cut off their heads screaming about. I mean, shit, they scream about, you know, increasing of a dollar for an issue. Could you even, but then they go to Kickstarter and they'll pay $20 for one issue. Mm-hmm. Could you even imagine? And you know, like, hey, Venditti, pretty damn good. Mm-hmm. The art, pretty damn good by Brian Hitch. You know, going into it, that's going to be some quality there. And you already know the character. Whether mm-hmm. you like him or not, you already know the character. Mm-hmm. So I'm just shocked that they, and sure, would they do it on Kickstarter? No. But I'm shocked that they haven't taken that business model and done their own DC starter or whatever it is. Just to be like, I wonder if people would pay an extra amount just, be, you know, put your money where your mouth is. Hmm. Because then you certainly wouldn't have to sell whatever it is, 100,000 copies.
Yeah.
If you were charging five times as much for that. You know what I'm saying? Like the numbers become pretty easily obtainable pretty quickly at that $20 limit. Mm-hmm. Would I want them to do that with everything? No, of course not. I don't want Batman to be $20. How dare you? Drop that down to $2.99, you bastard. The last thing I would want is comics to be gone. And all of a sudden, all we have are Kickstarters.
Right.
All we have is like indie books. Because I like Capes and Cowls. I like indies too. But that's still like there's certain creators that I can be guaranteed and I can trust on. Whether it's Capes and Cowls or Independence. But it'd be really hard to find that brand new writer. It'd be really hard to find that brand new artist without the big two around.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, comics are not going to go away.
I hope not. Not my lifetime, I hope not. And no, I'm much older no. than you. When no. I have my grabber, you can come over and get my boxes and enjoy those comic books. At least I'll die a happy person knowing comics were always there.
No, comics will never go away. There's always going to be comics. You know, I've said before, I think comics might end up being like vinyl records, you know, where you go to like, I mean, you already have a specialty store, but like it's, you know, the place where you buy vinyl records is probably very different than just, I don't think there's even music stores anymore, is there?
I would even say there was a time where vinyl records went away, unless you're looking at a specialty market.
Sure.
Very, very specialty market.
Yeah.
And now there has been a resurgence, I will say. But how can comics have more of a resurgence than right now when there's 10 comic book TV shows and 2 comic book movies every year? For how long has it been? Like, at this point, it's been how many years that they've been doing all these kick-ass superhero films? At some point, you have to look at a kid who was 7 at the time, starting off with Spider-Man and Iron Man, and now they're already graduating high school. And has that kid gone into a comic book store and bought a comic book? Probably not.
Well, I think that's I want to say myopic, but maybe that's a little too harsh. Because I think the majority of people that are like really into comics now didn't start at a comic shop. And I think maybe that's part of the problem that comics are having. And I'm not shitting on comic stores, but I do think if there was a healthy newsstand market, that you'd have more people buying comics.
I completely agree. If they were at Walgreens, CVS's, and grocery stores, I think you would have had kids getting into them at 6, 7 years old. Mm-hmm. Because they're at the grocery store, mom buys it for them as an impulse buy. Because mm-hmm. that's how I got into them.
And that's the key, an impulse buy. And like a true impulse buy, not like they do at Walmart when they're, you know, in the aisle that nobody walks through.
Yep.
Like where the soda machine is or the chips or whatever. That's where the comics need to be.
No, they need to be in the kids like coloring book area.
Sure.
That's where they need to be.
Fine. There too.
Yeah.
But
not in this weird tucked away Walmart corner.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Which is fine. I mean, like they're next to the Pokemon cards and whatever, and I guess kids still buy those. But you still have to go to that place. That's not an impulse buy.
And that's also a destination.
Right.
If you want your Pokemon cards, you better have a rich parent because you know you want those Pokemon cards. So that's what you're definitely going to get. And if you reach up and like, I'll take that comic book too. How about this? Oh, you better have some rich parents because there's no way that usually a parent's going to like, yeah, I'll get you whatever you want. No, it's always like pick one. Mm-hmm. Well, you're going to go for the Pokemon cards because mm-hmm. that's what you originally came for.
Yep.
Yeah.
This is true.
Yep.
But we'll see. It might change, right? Because they're expanding that line, right? It's not going to be a Walmart exclusive anymore. They're doing Target and some other places. I just hope it's still not that where even at Target you have to go to like whatever fucking aisle.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least Target has it in the book section.
Well, and that makes sense. And there's some stuff in the book section, but they're not comics.
Right.
They might have some like graphic novels or like whatever YA books or something like that.
Yeah, those digests.
Yeah, yeah. But it's not the comics. You gotta have it next to the drink machine or the chip rack or whatever.
Right.
Right? When you walk past it and you see it, you're like, ah, my kid likes Batman. Let me pick up this 100-page giant.
Or next to the Maxim magazine.
Ah, yes.
Because then you can stick the Maxim in the comic book, and then when your parent walks by, you can be like, I'm looking at this Spider-Man upside down right now.
Yes, exactly. Exactly that, Nick.
Thank you.
Exactly that. See, we just solved all of comics' problems.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
Well, we haven't solved them because they're not listening. See, if they listened, then we would solve it for them.
You know what we have to do, and we're not doing it tonight. We'll do it hopefully next week or, you know, over the weekend. Next time we record, let's go through the C, and this is very self-serving. Let's go through the C2E2 panels and discuss because I want to set up my app and get it all ready. Damn it.
I've decided my plan for C2E2 is to have no plan at all.
Uh-oh, that's dangerous. I thought our plan was always to do Artist Alley and shop on Friday when it's not bad.
Oh,
and
that, then for sure.
The clusterfuck that is Saturday, that's when we hopefully have panels to go to or we just hang out. And then Sunday you go back and try to scrub the floors again. But Friday, that's where you buy. Bye, bye, bye.
There you go.
Yes.
That's true.
Yeah.
yeah, I keep getting all these emails about panels and meet this creator, this person's up for interview. I'm like, I don't want to talk to any of you. I just want to go hang out. Like, if I see you and you want to chat with me, then by all means.
You don't want to see Animaniacs live?
Yeah, I got that one. What was that, yesterday?
Yeah.
I do love Animaniacs though. That was a great show.
So do I.
That's a great show.
That is the shit.
But no. I had a couple creators send me DMs over the last couple of days about getting together. So maybe. Nice. But I told them I'm not planning it. I said I'll just swing by your table and we can figure out when we get there.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yep. There's a panel called Level Up, Be a Nerd Boss. I wonder if Dinesh is going to be there.
That sounds like a title we could title it. For sure.
The Nerd Boss. He's got stuff cooking up.
Oh, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Good for him.
Mm-hmm. Very exciting. Anyways, what else is new?
What else is new? Oh, boy. Trying to think.
Have you watched anything good?
I finished the Netflix original series Losers. Have you checked that out?
No.
You would like it, Mr. Psychiatry.
Not related to the comic.
No. It is the series is 10 episodes, I believe, all about 30 minutes long, and they're all about sports, which isn't the reason that you would like it, but it's all about, sure, you can do documentaries on the big winning teams, but what about the person who chokes at the end of a golf game or shouldn't be winning the Iditarod and they keep coming in second for like 6 years in a row? none of these have ever been like, and then they finally won it. No, it's all just like you like, how do you deal with losing? How do you deal with that mental hurdle? But they, like, every one is a different, like, sport. So the first one's on boxing. The second one is on this British soccer team that the head of the head of the soccer association said at the end of the season, we're cutting the last team. So if you're in the last place, that entire team is gone, just wiped out. It is no more. And the entire documentary was about this team that consistently came in second to the last or last place. And they won their final game. And that gave them, by winning their final game, they got 3 points. And instead of being in last place, they went above the last place team by 1 point. Or the second to the last place team. So of course they had the feeling of victory and, you know, they won, but really you came in second to the last place. But it was fascinating. The boxing one was absolutely fascinating, like to the point where he wasn't losing, like he won the world title, but then his next fight after it, he lost and it was like a convincing defeat. And he said at that point, leading up to that fight, he never wanted to step into the ring. He never was interested in boxing. It was always pushed on him. Like, and it just played with his mind so much. And he got so like psyched out that he even said he put a gun in his mouth, but he just couldn't pull the trigger.
Oh, wow.
I'm telling you, it was really interesting. The story about this female Iditarod person and the connection that she had with her horse or with her sled dogs was fascinating. And it's so nice because they're only a half hour, so you're in and out. And what's sort of cool with the entire series is some parts, like they talk to this black Olympic figure skater, and the same thing happened to her because of race, that she consistently was like second and third place. But since they couldn't get Olympic footage to show, then like everyone had this, but since they couldn't get Olympic footage, it would be illustrated, and it had a really cool style throughout the entire series of these illustrations, these like cartoons. But it's good, well worth checking out. It was pretty fascinating.
Interesting, you know. Yeah, good
for psychology.
Back in the Aztec times, if you were the loser, you were really the winner, depending on how you looked at it. You ever heard of that? Well, I can't remember the name of it, but that ball game they used to play that was kind of like a mix of soccer and basketball?
Cricket?
No, it was an Aztec thing. So you can only hit the ball with your hips.
No.
Yeah. So, okay. All right. So yes. So let me tell you about this game, and this is very pertinent.
Okay, go on.
So the Aztecs used to have this game. I can't remember what it's called. We'll just call it fucking hip ball. And so there were two teams, and on each side there was a hole coming out of the wall. It was sideways, so kind of like basketball. It was elevated. But you could only hit the ball with your hips, and the point of the game was to score points. Now, most people think that the losing team was sacrificed to the gods, but that's not actually what happened. When they played these games during like ritual ceremonies, they sacrificed the winning team, because that was, you know, the winning team, you sacrifice them to the gods to make the gods happy. So if you were the loser, Sheesh. You were really the winner because you got to stay alive, except in eternal shame because you lost the game.
Holy Christ.
It's crazy,
huh? Wow. Thank you, Aztecs. Mm-hmm. Can I tell you my favorite episode of Losers?
Of course.
Dude. And this one, even if you only watch one, watch this one. It was about, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, it was about curling.
Oh.
And I didn't really know all that much about curling. So they actually went through the rules of curling, which was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then they went through this whole curling championship for the Breyer Cup. Mm-hmm. And it's like the biggest Canadian like award. And it is shown on national television. It is like thousands of people pack this place every year to watch it. Mm-hmm. And they had like all this footage from it, which was just great. It's great to watch like this crazy, like the crazy 80s, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, like styles and hair and stuff like that. And they went through like these two top teams, and this one team should have won. And at the very last round of this curling competition, they missed. They missed knocking the opponent's disc out from the point area to like, so they would get the point instead of the opponent. So you just see, like, you see it just go right by. You see everyone's reaction. And then they're talking to the people now who went through it. And this one guy was just like, from the losing team, he was like, no, all I saw was the rules of curling and I can exploit it. I can, the way they are right now, instead of everyone trying to add their stone to the middle, like, you know, the bullseye, instead of going into the middle and then you keep the stone that's closest and then you try to add your other stones in front to block them. And you do this for 10 rounds. And the one guy, he said, you know, with the current rules, instead of just trying to add and then play defensive, all he did was combine up a team around him for the entire next year. And all they were doing was striking, quote unquote, striking. And what that was, all they did was go on the offensive. And instead of getting points, every person on that team was there to throw the stone down and knock the opponent's stone out of the play. Whether their stone goes out or not, it doesn't matter. Get their stone off of the entire board until the very last round, and then they try to get the point that way. So it just goes 0-0-0-0 all the way to the 10th, all the way to the 10th round. And they won the Briar Trophy. And by doing that, like, everybody was like, this is the most boring thing ever. Like, they changed the entire game.
Interesting.
So then the following, like, couple years, every team did exactly that. So the entire, like, they were losing the fan base of curling, were just leaving. They were just, like, sick of seeing how boring this is.
Huh.
And then, like, after 2-3 years, the Curling Association had to come out with a brand new rule to try to get more scoring as well as stop this, like, striking from going up. So this guy went from a loser to, like, completely reinventing the game. It was fascinating. Awesome. It was awesome. Really, really cool. Yeah.
There's a funny story about curling that I heard recently on a podcast that I listened to. This guy, he runs, like, an IT company in, God, one of those weird states, North Dakota.
Okay.
And he also, like, as a side gig, does some radio show, right?
Oh.
And so apparently the guy that runs the radio station that he works at was doing some show on the radio and was talking mad crap about curling, okay? And this is in North Dakota, so, like, people play curling. Like, they curl. Like, is that – you play curling? You curl? Whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like, North Dakota, Minnesota, that area. So they're big into curling. And so he's getting, like, hate mail and, like, people calling the station threatening to boycott and this, that, and the other. And instead of backing down, he's like, you know what? I'll prove it. He's like, I'll prove that this game is stupid. I'll just put a team together of random people that have never played, that have never curled. And, I guarantee you we can beat, like, the national champions. And so he just put together a team of, like, whatever, 4 people or 5 people. From the radio station that I've never curled before, this guy being one of them. And they went up against, I don't know if it was like an actual defending champion curler team, or if it was like a, it was definitely like a championship winning team. It may have been from a few years ago.
Sure.
And they played them and, like, destroyed them.
Wow.
Like, obliterated them. And the guy's like, see, I told you, like, there's no skill required to play curling.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was funny. Interesting on the episode, the guy even had, like, 5 rules that you had to follow for his teammates. Mm. And he went through, like, all 5. And, like, it was just him and this one guy. And then, like, they would try to get 2 other people to be part of this team. Mm. And the other guy was like, oh, yeah, if John... He goes, we went through a lot of people. If John caught him smoking while playing, they were gone. Huh. If one of the guys brought their wives to with them on the weekend for the match, they're gone. And he just, like, rifled through people left and right.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a good series. I would highly recommend it, because especially a half hour, you're in, you're out. Oh my God.
I will check that out. Yeah. It sounds pretty good.
It was.
I will start with the curling episode.
Oh my God. Yeah. So crazy.
That's awesome. So I watched two movies and a TV show.
Oh, okay.
The movies that I watched were The Commuter.
Huh.
I think that's on Amazon Prime. It's okay. Liam Neeson of Ooh. Taken fame. And the other one that I watched, I think was also on Prime, Sunshine.
Wait, was The Commuter, was that the one where he had to stop a bomb or something?
Yeah, he's on the train.
Yeah. How was that? Because the trailer looked really good.
So the trailer was better than the movie.
Darn it.
But the movie was good.
Okay.
It wasn't great. If I had to rate it, I would give it a 6 out of 10.
Oh, that's not bad. I'll take that.
I liked it.
Was it, okay, now this is something, because I'm going to try to convince the wife. Was it really bloody, or was there any torture in it?
I don't remember torture. I mean, there's violence. I mean, it's Liam Neeson.
Yeah, of course. But I mean, there's also unsaid violence, or there's like bullets being like shredding out somebody's chest and, you know, gushing out blood, that type of thing.
Yeah, I don't remember any of that stuff.
Okay, I might have to convince the wife to watch this.
It's,
then.
I think it's worth watching. It's cool. Like, I don't know, an hour and a half, something like that.
Okay.
It's interesting. The setup is interesting, and it comes back at the end. So I enjoyed it. It's I mean, it's a typical Liam Neeson movie, right? I mean, if you like Taken, then you'll probably like this.
Cool.
Because all his movies are the same.
Was Sunshine that movie that came out like two decades ago?
Sunshine is from 2007.
Ooh, I am close. Okay.
Yeah. Not to be confused with Solaris? the George Clooney remake of the fantastic 70s sci-fi film. Sure. The George Clooney one being garbage. Sunshine is set in the near future. I can't remember like what year, but whatever, like 50 years from now, 100 years from now. Mm-hmm. And the sun is going dark. So there's like an ice age on the planet, but you don't see that till the end. But they do mention it. And so people send a crew with a nuclear bomb to go restart the sun.
Oh yeah. Who is in it?
There's a lot of people in it, as a matter of fact.
Huh.
Captain America's in it.
Okay.
Chris Evans. Michelle Yao from Star Trek Discovery. She's in it.
Yes.
I can't remember the guy's name. The main guy from 28 Days Later. You've probably never seen that.
No.
Fantastic zombie flick.
All right.
Reimagined the zombie genre. Except I don't like the super fast zombies, but whatever. I can't remember his name. He's basically the main guy. He's a physicist.
Okay.
Who else? The Asian guy from Lost. Not the Korean guy that's on the plane. One of the others.
Okay.
He was in the Wolverine movie. He was, he's Musashi in Westworld. I don't know if you watch Westworld.
No.
He was in the 47 Ronin movie that came out a couple years ago. Freaking awesome actor. He's in it. The girl from, what the hell's the name of that movie? Insidious, which you probably also haven't seen. I'm trying to think, what would she have been in that you would recognize her from? You remember X-Men Apocalypse?
Yeah.
Moira McTaggart?
Yep.
Okay. She's in this.
All right.
Dude, you watched this and I was like, oh, I know that person. Oh, the dude that you like, Mark Strong, he's in this.
Oh, I do like Mark Strong.
Mark Strong's in this, except you don't know it's Mark Strong unless you look up the credits.
Dang it.
Because his whole body has like third degree burns the entire movie.
Oh, jeez.
But yeah, so it's his crew going to the sun to kickstart the sun. To stop this ice age. And along the way, we learn the ship that they're on is the Icarus II. So the whole time I'm like, well, where's Icarus I? Fortunately, if you watch the movie, you find out exactly what happened to Icarus I. And that's when Mark Strong shows up because he was the captain of Icarus I.
So Danny Boyle directed it and Alex Garland wrote it?
No. Really?
Yeah. Yes.
Maybe. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not. Cillian Murphy.
There you go. Cillian Murphy.
Yeah. Scarecrow. Speak of the devil.
There you go. That's the other one that he was in. Yeah.
And Rose. Ooh, you didn't tell me Rose Byrne was in it. Hello.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Rose Byrne. Uh-huh. Anyway, dude, I'm telling you, you watch this and you're like, oh, yeah. I know that person. That's from that one. I know that one. That's from that one. That's from that one. Awesome. Yeah, it's interesting.
Writes a good story.
He does. There's kind of a weird twist at the end. It starts off like fairly typical sci-fi stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Like the disaster movies. What was the one we talked about last time? Armageddon, like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Except a little more, as Mike likes to say, pretentious. There's a lot of artsy shots and stuff like that in here. And
where did you see this out?
On Prime Video.
Oh, okay.
Prime Video, I think. Oh, it's on HBO.
Oh, HBO. Okay. Yeah. Prime Video is $3.99.
Okay. Rent. Yeah. It's on HBO because I signed up for a trial and never canceled it.
That's how they get you.
That's how they get you. So it starts off pretty typical. And then they end up going to investigate. Because they get a distress signal from Icarus I, and they go check it out, and like everything seems fine and operational, but then they find the crew has like basically ashes in this viewing room because they have a viewing room where they can see space. Mm. And that's when Mark Strong comes in. He's gone crazy and apparently has seen God. So it does get a little esoteric.
Yeah, that sounds like Danny Boyle.
Yeah. But when that showed up, I was like, oh, this kind of reminds me of, oh God, what's that garbage ass movie? Event Horizon.
Oh yeah.
You remember when the Jurassic Park dude goes crazy and he gets whatever possessed by the demon or whatever the hell it is.
Mm-hmm.
When he sees the other dimension, it's kind of like that. So in that respect, I was like, you could have done more with this, but, but it was interesting. It was very interesting. And again, there's a little pretentiousness in here, but it's really enjoyable. I really liked it.
All right.
And then you have a happy ending.
Nice.
Kind of. I mean, it's not happy for the crew, but it's happy for everyone else.
Gotcha. Hey, speaking of Danny Boyle, before you go on, let me tangent.
Yes.
The last movie I went to go see, I saw a trailer for Danny Boyle's new film coming out, I think at the end of the year, called Yesterday. Have you seen that trailer?
I have not.
It has the same guy who is in Danny Boyle's Slumdog Millionaire, the lead.
Yeah.
Has him in it and, Kate McKinnon's in it. There's a lot of guest stars in it. But it's him. I don't know how it happens, but it's almost like he gets put into an alternate dimension where he's sitting around like a campfire with some buddies and he starts singing a Beatles song. And everyone's like, oh my God, how did you come up?
Oh, that's hilarious.
And it's a universe without the Beatles.
That's hilarious.
So, but he knows every Beatles song. So you see him going on like the James Corden show, singing a Beatles song and going through all this stuff. And it's him struggling, wanting to like, I think it's a romantic comedy because he wants to be with this girl and this girl's like, I'm just a bookkeeper from, you know, South Essex. Why would you want to be with me when you have the world ahead of you? Mm-hmm. And he's just like, but I don't want that. I want you. But everyone else is dragging him off because he's singing Beatles songs without the Beatles in that universe. But it looked really cool. Like I was watching that and I'm a sucker for romantic comedies, but I looked over at Liz and I was just like, that's a really interesting twist on something that I never would even conceptualize. Like, that's pretty cool. All right, I'll go see that.
You know, that's really funny. I think about that sometimes when, like, a really popular song comes out. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, I could have written that.
Yep.
And then I think to myself, like, man, if only I could go back in time, like, you know, a couple of years and write the song.
Yes.
That's awesome. That you I might see that.
It, you could sell. You could have sold it to Awkwafina and made tons of money from
right?
it.
Right? Yes. Yes. Man. All right. I might go see that. I'm not into romantic comedies, but that sounds cool.
Check out the trailer, because the trailer is very clever. Mm. I recommend it. Mm. Yesterday.
And then I started a rewatch of one of my favorite shows of all time, Fringe.
Oh, good. Where was this on?
It is on IMDb Freedive.
You're on the Freedive. Okay.
Well, you know, you can get the app on your Fire TV, so that's what I did. And there's commercials, but not that many, and they're all Amazon Echo commercials.
Sure. Yeah. Who cares?
So I'm like, hey, whatever. So yeah, I wrapped up season one last night, and then I started season two today. I love that show.
Yeah, I'd like to rewatch that for sure.
It's fantastic. And then there was things that I caught that I don't remember. I mean, that show came out like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of stuff that I forgot about it. Nice. But one of the, I don't know if criticisms is right, but one of the things that people gave it shit for when it was coming out is that it was kind of an X-Files ripoff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because when you get to the back half of the season, there's like three Easter eggs with the X-Files. Mm. Like there's one where there's these, this killer. I don't want to give the whole thing away, but there's a killer from someplace, that is a shapeshifter. And so that's a nod to the X-Files. But then, then at one point in the episode, they actually show him killing somebody and putting this device in their mouth. And then into his mouth so that he can shapeshift. That's how he does the shapeshifting. And as he's doing that, on the TV is an episode of The X-Files.
Nice.
And then later on in a couple episodes, there's a Senate committee hearing because they're trying to shut down the Fringe division. And, one of the senators is talking about how, like, for decades we spent all this money on the X designation and this Fringe division and we can't have that anymore. And I was like, yes! Yes. So that was cool to see too. But yeah, so I finished up season one and, man, that show's still fantastic.
Nice.
There's, from what I remember, as they go further into the seasons, it becomes more of a, like an overarching story per season. Whereas the first season's very much like X-Files where you have, Monster of the Week, but you still have this like mythology going on in the background of what this place is and all this other weird stuff going on, as a result of the main characters in the story. But, yeah, really, really good still. And that's Freedom cool. is free. So, go check that out.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. It's good.
I forgot to tell you, I did wrap up a TV series as well. Mm. The wife last Saturday was like, let's watch, Umbrella Academy.
Oh.
And then all of a sudden, midnight rolled around, 12:30 rolled around, and we finished it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
I know. Oh my God. It was so long. I was even ready to tap out at like 10:30. I was like, oh, why don't we just wait on this? We'll watch the last couple episodes, you know, tomorrow. And she was like, oh, come on. I'm not even tired. Let's stay up. Let's do this.
Wow.
So.
Very nice. I have not finished it. Matter of fact, since last we talked, I haven't even watched an episode.
Dang it.
I've been too busy with Fringe. And, yep. I've been reading like books.
Yes. Big boy books.
Big boy books. Matter of fact, we're only, what's today? March 7th. I've already read 3 books this month.
Nice. Look at you.
I mean, they're shorter books.
Still.
And they're on Audible, by the way. So that's why I can read so fast, because I can just listen at work.
Nice.
2 were, like true crime things.
Mm-hmm.
The Demon Next Door and Killer by Nature. And then I also, I don't know if you ever read Siddhartha. I had to read that in that same religion class in high school. It's like a fictionalized, it's not really a retelling because the Buddha's separate, but, Siddhartha Gautama, the guy that is the Buddha in Buddhism. Mm. It's a story about him. It's really interesting. And I read it, whatever it was, 20 years ago, more than that. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to reread this. And I didn't have any credits on my Audible account because I've been reading so many goddamn books. So I just bought it. I mean, it was $5 or whatever.
Sure.
Matter of fact, I'm going to buy a couple more tonight because they're doing a big sale on Audible.
Oh.
The Meant to Be Heard sale.
Nice.
Buy one, get one free.
Ooh, that is a good deal.
Yeah, it's a great deal. There's not a whole lot of stuff in there, but I found some interesting stuff.
Well, with your HBO account still going, are you going to watch that documentary series based on Serial? It's like an unsolved crime. You know, that Serial, whatever it was. The podcast? Yeah, the podcast.
No, but I'm going to tell my wife about that.
Yeah, because the trailer, holy Christ, the trailer looks good and very compelling.
She's been listening to one of their podcasts. Which one is it? What's the name of that?
An NPR one?
Yeah, no, it's not NPR. The Gimlet. Let me see here. Yeah, you know, there was the NPR guys that left to start their own podcast company.
Oh, yeah.
Shows. Let's see here. I'll tell you right now which one she's been listening to. Rhymetown?
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, I think that's it. Literally, like, she has not watched TV in like 2 weeks. All she's been doing is listening to Crimetown.
Wow, that's impressive.
Mm-hmm. I guess.
It is.
She just sits there and listens to Crimetown and plays Sims.
Well, you just sit there and listen to Audible and play Hearthstone, so
no, cut her some slack. I listen to Audible at work.
Cut her some slack.
Yeah, I know. I'm just kidding. So that's what she's been doing. And then I was introduced, Nick, to a very weird game that I will not play. Reagan nearly stole my phone and downloaded it on it.
Uh-oh.
But I did play it on her phone for literally 2 minutes. It's like literally all Reagan does is play BitLife.
BitLife?
BitLife. Now, do you... you're a little bit older, so my assumption is no. We had to have graphing calculators in high school, okay? And one thing, that's how I learned to program, was on my TI-83, because you could write programs in BASIC. And so we used to like share games, like write games and share them, or like you could download games at the computer lab and put them on your calculator and then you could share them. yeah, you know, they have a cable so you could plug it in, whatever. Anyways. That's how I learned how to code in BASIC in high school with a calculator. And one of the games that we played was Drug Wars. Did you ever play Drug Wars?
No.
So in Drug Wars, you were a drug dealer and you start off with no money and you start dealing like Quaaludes because, I mean, this is the 90s. you start dealing Quaaludes and then you move up to like harder drugs and you create a criminal organization selling drugs. Anyways, this game is basically that. Except it's an entire life. So you can birth or kill a person at any point, your character. And you start off like as a kid and you have to go through school and like decide to go to college or not. And you have relationships. You can choose to date people and have kids. You choose your sexuality, your profession. Like if you buy a house or a car, this, that, and like vacations, all kinds of stuff. And, in some ways it's kind of like, you remember Tamagotchi?
Yeah.
Kind of like that, where you have like health bars for like happiness and health, relationships, and you want to make sure they're in the green. So you do stuff to like make sure that they're in the green. And there's literally no action in the game. It's all text-based.
Oh my gosh.
And your homepage it looks like a Facebook timeline where like, you know, whatever you name your character, like Mary started dating Johnny and Mary got a promotion at blah, blah, blah. Like, it's all text.
Sure.
And you just choose life actions, and those actions impact things. And then sometimes there's, like, random stuff thrown at you. Like, your friend comes to your house and gives you a suitcase and wants you to take it to Venezuela. What do you do? And you can choose to, you know, take it to Venezuela or not. And sometimes...
So is this what your daughter is playing?
Yes.
Oh, my God. What a bizarre sim-related...
Right?
Game. Holy
Sim adjacent.
Christ. It's like The Sims met Grand Theft Auto.
Yes.
Without any violence.
It's pretty interesting. And it was funny because I looked at it and I was like, why don't you have money? Because she had like negative $5,000. And she's like, well, I don't have a job. And I was like, well, get a job. She's like, well, every position, she's like, I went to school to be a biologist, but, there's no positions available. And I was like, Reagan, if you can't find something in your field, then you try to go something a little simpler just to start a career somewhere and get some money. So I applied.
You didn't tell her just to become a Quaalude dealer. Do what daddy did and become a Quaalude dealer. So, we all know this. And then take a suitcase to Mexico and with I don't know what, and then bring it back.
There you
and
go.
Then you'll have $5,000.
Well, so I applied for like, it was like IT support or something, and I didn't get hired. And I was like, huh, what's like a job that you don't really need any skills to get? So I applied as a flight attendant. And I gave her the thing back, and I was like, why is it not paying you money? She's like, oh, well, you have to age your character. So you have to age the character, right? Like, you can't go on unless you age. So I pressed the little age button, and it ages you 1 year at a time. And then she started getting money, so we bought a house and whatever. It was fun, but not something that I would do, like, all the time or put on my phone.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, bit life.
Well, you better avoid that one.
I am. It's no Hearthstone, I'll say that.
As you're like, well, of course, now that I'm a flight attendant, it'd be so much easier to move my Quaaludes back and forth. Reagan, let daddy play this for an hour or so.
Well, so it's funny, though, because my wife has played it some with her. And what's funny is when they play this game, they don't actually like play to win. They play to lose.
What?
So like they always make the worst possible choice. Because it's funny to see the character like go to jail for transporting the suitcase to Venezuela or whatever.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Like they always play to lose.
So they're living out an unrealistic fantasy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hilarious. So they don't want to become like a tech support person.
No.
They're like, that's too real life. No, thank you.
Like at one point, like Reagan kept asking her parents for money on purpose. Because if you do that, they kind of quit talking to you.
They disown you.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is exactly like real life.
Uh-huh.
Learn from this, Reagan.
Yeah. So when they play, they always make terrible choices. Because it's fun to see their character just have a shitty life, I guess. I don't know.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Seems like human nature to me. I don't know what to tell you, Nick.
Yeah, it does. It definitely does. That's hilarious. Mm-hmm.
Anyways, that's all I got. You want to wrap it up?
Wrap it up.
All right. You've been listening to the Nerdy Legion podcast with Nick, but more. Thanks for listening. It's good chatting with you, Nick.
It's always good chatting with you, Martino.
It's been an interesting week, personally.
Yes. We can talk about that later.
We'll talk about that some other time. We're not doing that now because that's going to be a very long conversation.
But a well-needed one.
Yes. It's been a very interesting couple of weeks for me. What's the word that I want to use? Developmentally, I guess we could say. We're not going to talk about that either. We'll talk about that some other time. But it's been interesting. So just remember, if you ever have a tough time with anything, there's always people that are willing to listen. That's where I'll leave it at. If you want to get in touch with us, @Nick Wetmore, @Geekvine, @Nerdy Legion, thanks for listening. See you next time.